This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Delmi, I'm 48 from Norfolk, and I guess you could describe me as one of those middle-lane drinkers. You know, no rock bottom, no major catastrophe, no big drama. Just chilling out with beers at weekends, probably a couple of times during the week in busy periods, and everything going all right on the surface. But just this underlying frustration for quite a while that, you know, there had to be more to life. Frustrated with never quite having the time or the energy that I wanted, never quite being on top form. So I wanted to rein back the alcohol, but I was never going to give it up forever or give it up completely, because that would just make me one of those weird people that you hear about. But so I got in touch with OTI, started hanging out, joining some Zoom calls. Totally recommend doing that, listening to the podcast. And I guess if you're in the fringes thinking, should I do this? What's it like? Is it really worth it? I just say, do whatever works for you. Do 30 days, do 100 days, and see how it goes and make your own decisions, because it will definitely be very different to what you expect it to be and 100 times more worthwhile.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Over the Influence. It is wonderful to have you listening. I think we can safely say, we are probably the world's fastest growing, biggest alcohol-free podcast, something like that, Basically, absolutely shed loads of downloads. It's going really, really well, and we are flying high in the podcast chart. So that's thanks to you listening and for your brilliant reviews. So thank you so much. A quick introduction as to who we are, if you are just listening for the very, very first time. My name is Sharon Hartley. I live in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I am now, well, I've stopped counting days, 3 years something alcohol free. Didn't think I could do 3 days, but I did. And then I did four, and then I did five. Our guest is clapping. I can see him cheering. Woohoo! It will never not surprise me. Brilliant stuff still keeps happening because I am alcohol free. It doesn't make life perfect, but bloody hell, life goes on with knobs on. And it's been the best thing I have ever done in my life. Hence this podcast. I just love to sing about sobriety and share a few of the shit bits as well. As always, I would like to introduce my glamorous co-host. I don't do this on my own. We have got the very lovely expert author as featured in Men's Health. He's our expert. Freddie, I'm dead excited.
I thought you were going to say when you were talking about with knobs on, speaking of which, here's Freddie.
Here's
but, but no, it's... Yeah, hello, here I am, fresh from the pages of Men's Health magazine, which was, yeah, and very nice surprise this week, definitely. But hello, everybody. My name is Freddie. I am here in the future in New Zealand. Very happy, very sober, which is good because we are officially the world's number one alcohol-free podcast. Over 2.5 years ago, now life was very, very different for me. I awoke one drizzly morning, very hungover in a very not very nice hotel room, and yeah, thought it was about time to change my life. So after failing 1,000 times, I finally got it right, finally changed my drinking habits, changed my life. And here I am, couldn't be happier, with an amazing guest today with the world's number one alcohol-free podcast. And yeah, my little face is also in Men's Health magazine, which is nice.
Thank you, expert Freddie. I'm just going to call you Freddie the expert from now on, because it will never not tickle me this. It is brilliant. Also, background Ben, no longer in the background.
No. Sorry, I know this is dull and hater. As of right now, I'm looking at the Apple charts.
Go on.
And we are higher than Russell Brand's new podcast, Wim
Get
Hof.
Get out. Get out.
Really?
podcast. We are the number one. As of this moment, and we are recording right now, we are the number one alcohol-free podcast in the world.
Oh, that's a joke. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm every week, we're number 31 in the health. So out of all the health and fitness podcasts in existence, we're number 31 in the overall health and fitness category, which is bonkers, isn't it?
Yeah.
We're coming for you, Dr. Ranjan Chatterjee and Fern Cotton. We're coming for you.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
Well, Russell Brand, who's he?
Yeah. Encouraging people to put down the drink one pod at a time. My name's Ben, and I'm the producer of Over the Influence. I have been, I've started counting days again because I stopped counting days because I was over 15 months. But I've also just generally trying to get my health back on track. I'm trying to count my steps, trying to count my calories. I'm doing a lot of counting.
You like your numbers, don't you,
I do.
Ben? Don't forget to underline them.
Nearly 500 days alcohol free.
Yes. Now,
which I'm chuffed about.
Wow. Yeah,
so amazing.
Like a good milestone. I don't think I was a hugely problematic drinker at the time that I gave up alcohol, but it was, let's say, my relationship with alcohol was only going one way. I think give me a few more years and the stresses of life. In my 20s, I drank because it was fun. In my 30s, I was drinking because I was stressed and it was not doing me any good whatsoever. Relationships, work. I've given it up and now I feel really confident to say never going to go back to drinking again because I'd be an idiot. Just looking at it purely objectively, my life is a lot better now. My relationships are stronger. Work's going better. Everything is better because I don't drink. So that's me. Thanks.
Oh, I could listen to you all day.
It was a weird ending, wasn't it?
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Ben. For sharing.
Back to you. Back to the studio.
Back to the studio. I love it. Thank you so much. I think the reason this podcast is doing so bloody well and is number one, flying high in the hit parade, guys. Number one
in the hit parade. You need to explain that one, not just to people who live outside the UK, but also to people who were born after the year.
Yeah, so I've just highlighted the oldest bloody person involved in this podcast. The Hit Parade is, or was, the charts. We're doing really, really well. And it's because of you listening. Thank you so much. And that is because we have the very best guests on the podcast. And it gives me great pleasure to finally, we've got there in the end, to finally introduce our guest to you today. He's called Stuart Cook. He's from Bristol. And Stuart, before I ask you a little bit about who you are and where you're from, and we'll talk all about you and your story, what caught my eye with you was your Instagram account. Ben, as producer, please can I have permission to say a big sweary word?
Yes.
Thank you. So
you don't need my permission, love.
No, but it just feels naughty because I know I'm going to say it. Yeah. So Stuart's Instagram is called Sober and Fucking Enlightened.
Well,
and
don't say that.
Don't tell me off. Don't tell my kids. And from the off, I thought, I like this guy. I like his Insta name. I think he's going to be right up our street. And Stuart, welcome to the chaos that is Over the Influence. How are you?
Thank you very much. Glad to be here. Really, really nervous. I've never done a podcast before.
So exciting.
It's an exclusive. Here we go. We're just hitting the exclusives. We are honoured to have you here, Stuart.
My podcast genie.
Is it as professional and slick production as you're expecting it to be, Stuart?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
It's number one.
Stuart, it is wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much. Please do not be nervous because this podcast, yes, we talk about addiction issues. We talk about alcohol. And that vast scale it is on, you know, from grey area drinking to just having a couple to being what some people might use the word alcoholic. We talk about it all. But while we're talking about all this, what we really do enjoy is having a laugh and getting to know you as well. So for anybody that isn't in the sober community already following your brilliant Insta account, I absolutely love it. Just tell us a little bit about you, Stuart, where you are, how old you are, whereabouts you live, what you get up to, that sort of thing. We'll ease you in gently.
So, thank you. I'm 31 years old, live in Bristol. I am coming up 600 days sober, so about...
Amazing.
Yeah, just over a year and a half. It's my
brilliant.
Second time being sober. So I was sober for 5 years, and then relapsed for 5 years, and then now I'm back.
You look amazing. You look really, really well. And if you don't mind, when we got in touch and we started chatting over email. I always say to the guests, would you mind sending me a picture, please, that we can share on our social media, you know, to let people know that the face behind the voice. And you sent me, I call it a before and after. It's not really before and after. It's this young Stuart and the man you are today. And I looked at young Stuart and this vulnerable young thing with the saddest eyes, and I just wanted to squeeze him. And I want you to tell me, take us back, and maybe just start there, if you don't mind. What was the story behind that photograph?
So that there, I was about 18 years old, and I was living in a homeless shower, because that's my drinking took me there straight away. I'm a massive advocate for people who don't necessarily have a problem with drink, just stopping it, because do it. It'll improve your life. Everyone can deal with being sober. You don't have to have had a problem with alcohol to stop it. You know, you don't have to have a problem with cows to stop drinking dairy. And do you know what I mean? It's
absolutely,
crack on.
Yeah.
But me personally, my story was, it was a problem straight away. I was a very shy, nervous kid. Never quite felt like I belonged. Always just kind of felt like there was this glass wall between me and the rest of the world. And I just couldn't figure out how to get through it. And then I tried cider when I was 12, and I felt I was Superman. Like, it just done something, just made my shoulders just come down. I was chatting to the girls that we were with. I was getting in arguments with lads and trying to be all laddie. And I don't know, I just felt like it was Popeye and spinach. Turned out to be Superman and Kryptonite. And then, yeah, inside, it really, really picked up when I was about 16, 17. And then inside about 2 years of that, it got really bad. And I started to notice it was getting bad because all my friends were going to college and university, and I was just drinking. And it was around 2006, 2007, so it was when the pubs all started doing 3-for-1 on a Thursday, £10 all you can drink on a Sunday. And I don't think they could do that anymore the way they were doing it then, but it was really ramping up. So it became Saturday and Sunday, and then Friday, and then Wednesday was when they did the 3-for-1. So I did Wednesday. Before you know it, it was like one day a week I wasn't out on the lash. And yeah, eventually I just started, it was kind of like rolling a roulette wheel, which Stuart would come out that evening. And I'd wake up thinking, well, that's not what I ordered. Until, yeah, I alienated myself from all my friends and family. They didn't want to be around me. I was always in trouble with the police, or, you know, annoying the wrong people. So yeah, I ended up in a homeless shelter by about somewhere between 17 and 18. I went down to about 6 stone, and I'm 6'1", so it was quite bad.
Oh, Stuart.
I had I couldn't feel my bottom three fingers. They were completely numb.
Oh, my God.
And I think I went into a dry house at about 20 to get sober the first time. I made it 5 years at that point. I just white-knuckled it for a long time.
That's young, isn't it? That's really young, and a shitload of stuff to deal with at that age, to find yourself in a homeless shelter.
Well, that was the problem. Like, I didn't at the time, I didn't think I had a lot of stuff to deal with once I got sober. So I got sober at 20, and I was literally sober for 5 years to the day. It was the fifth anniversary I drank again. And I went about it by, I went to 12-step fellowships, and then come out of that after about a year. At that point, I had another snowball behind me to go, right, that's it now. I'm going to get the house. I'm going to get the wife. I'm going to get the job. And I did. Got a good career in the betting industry. Got my own home. Got married. Just ticked all these boxes until eventually, didn't do any work on myself. I just thought this would all fix me and make me happy. And my ex-wife has someone close to her who's a drinker like me. So she always said, look, you ever drink, we're done. I was like, fair enough. Until the day when, I reckon you'd probably be all right. Yeah, I reckon I'd be all right. And then, bang. I don't blame her, I blame me. Like, because I was excited when she said that. I was trying to play it down, but I was excited. So I drank on the fifth anniversary, and then my life went downhill fast. Like, inside 6 months, it went bad. To the point where I was, come the end of that drinking, I was, to go from a marriage, career, house, I was on my own. Wife was with someone else, had a baby, all that kind of stuff. I was on my own in this little room with a bed and a sink, and that was it. family wouldn't speak to me, friends wouldn't speak to me. It was, I had a couple of friends that still checked in. But yeah, I was completely alone at that point.
That's a crazy story, Stuart. And I think there's so many different places that we can go with it. I mean, I think, yeah, I grew up near Bristol myself. So, yeah, and I know what, all the southwest of the UK with, I learnt my drinking skills with cider and everything as well. And I know that's just the way it goes in those parts. But I think it's to go on that journey, like you say, to have those 5 years in the bank and then go back into it. And what was going through your mind? Did you think you could moderate? Did you start drinking with the intention of saying, like, I just want that oblivion again? And what were you thinking with it all?
It took a journey. So basically, yes to everything you just said. It took a journey. It started off with when my ex-wife said to me, "Like, I think you'd be all right. I don't think you were an alcoholic. I think you were just a very troubled kid. Now you're a grown man and yeah, I reckon it'll be okay." Internally, I was thinking, don't act too excited. Don't act too excited. She'll take it away. She'll take it away. And then the next day, I went into the corner shop next to my betting shop and we decided we were going to have a drink. And I thought, well, what a grown-up's drink. Because at that point, I've not drank in my 20s. Like, I don't know what a grown-up's drink. Wine. They drink wine. Okay. What wine should I get? I don't know what wine to get. Just get a red, a white, and a pink. Sorted. Now I'm getting three bottles. I was just going to get a bottle. Now I'm getting three. Still can't clock what's going on in my head. And then as I was waiting to queue for it, I remember looking to the right and seeing Jack Daniels and Coke in a can. That wasn't around when I quit, since I'd been sober. So I was thinking, oh, I love Jack Daniels. That was my drink. Oh, no, but I can't go back with one of those because I'll look too eager and then it'll all get taken away from me. But it is two for whatever pound, £4. Well, might as well get two. I know, if we drink them both before we get home, it's a 10-minute walk, by the way. If we drink them before we get home, she'll never know. So I'm already planning on lying and covering it up on a walk home. So I've not even drank yet and I'm already planning hiding things. And I still couldn't see that there was a problem there. So I did. I drank them both on the way home. Went back home. Sat and watched a film. I drank all the red. My ex-wife drank most of the white. And we agreed we didn't like the pink. So I drank the pink when she was asleep, because she passed out during the film. And then I finished off the white and gaslit her and pretended that she drank the white when she woke up. Because that's the level I would be willing to go to lie about me drinking. It would just be like, oh, no, you drank it. No, you remember, you drank it. And yeah, so even from the beginning, it was, internally, I thought I was okay, but I was just blind. Like, I was completely blind to the fact that it was a problem. And it became very, very apparent outwardly to everyone around me that it was a serious problem within months, 2 months, and it was a problem. Everything changed.
Stuart, I don't want to ask a question that will change your opinion of me. I know we've just met, but I suppose this is quite personal. And I think if your ex-wife hadn't said those words to you at that point, would you have stayed sober? And the reason I ask that question is that I do feel like we hear all sorts of stories within the community. There's a lot of people who give up alcohol and the problem that they have is that their partner carries on drinking. But then I have heard stories of people linking their sobriety to a person, and that can be tricky for a number of different reasons, not just in terms of that person then says, oh, actually I think, but that person leaves for a different reason, that person dies, that person is no longer in their life for whatever reason. I know that's really personal and it's taking you to a place you might not want to think about or talk about.
No, like since I've been sober, me and my ex-wife have spoken. We've gone through a very, very amicable divorce. I've met her partner. It's good. We've just gone our separate ways. We had a bit of an amends thing, and yeah, it was a nice, pleasant experience. But the answer to the question would be yes, I would have stayed sober. For how long, I don't know, because it was really easy for me to just, oh, I'm allowed to now. Yes, because I got to a point where, like I said, I'd done no work on myself at all. It all depended upon, like you say, this other person. And I was miserable in my life. I was miserable. Like, my ex-wife was going out and partying with her friends, going on girls' holidays and stuff, and I would just sit on my own, jealous and resentful that she was doing that. I was always a husband that, like, I'd never, you know, you go do what you want, you're a grown woman, that's fine, da da da. But internally, I was jealous. I was so jealous because I had nothing going on in my own life. I would just sit and play FIFA at home. I didn't want to go and make friends. I've always struggled to make male friendships. But yeah, I was miserable and I needed something to pick me up. So it was a matter of time before I just, if my life isn't something that makes me happy, well, I'm not going to try and protect it. And I was just really, really not getting anything from it. So after I started drinking again, I think inside 18 months, the marriage was done. It all sort of came to in a big fight, in a big argument. We had people round. It was a drunken argument. And then, obviously, won't go too much into it, but it was a big drunken argument. We had a talk the next day and it was done. And at the time, it was the single moment where I'd accepted what I was, and I identify as an alcoholic. I know not everyone does, but it's just, for me, if anything, it's just easier. It's just a bit of terminology, done. But it was the first time that I thought, wow, this is, okay, I've got a problem. The problem that went on with it was that I didn't care. I felt like my life had just been pulled out from under me, so I didn't care that I had a problem. I knew that I had a problem with alcohol. I knew it was going to destroy my life. I just didn't care. Who was it? I think it was Dean on one of your shows the other week said it talks at you in different voices,
yeah,
and different accents. Dean. Yeah, so it changed on me. It went from they don't know what they're talking about, we're fine, you've got this, it's absolutely, we're all going to be okay, don't worry about them, to they were right all along. You absolute asshole. Like you're a bad person, you don't deserve this, look at what you've done to your life, no one cares about you, blah, blah, blah. And it was just hit that F it button. So I went on an absolute rampage for about 2 years until I had nothing left. And I was sat on that bed, in that little bedsit, staring at this wall for about somewhere between 20 minutes and an hour. I really think I was just staring at this wall, just thinking about how I was going to take my own life, because I thought I've got nothing left. Until, I don't know what happened, but something in my brain just clicked and I thought, actually, no. Like, I started thinking about my ex-wife and her happy new life, my nieces who I'm no longer allowed to see because I was never in a fit state, friends, family members, all sorts. And I just thought, I want a life. I want friends. I want family. I want a job. I want my own home. But why can I not have that? So I made a phone call, and within 10 days, I was in supported housing, getting therapy. And that was the 13th of March, 2020. So when I came down to Bristol, back to Bristol to go into that supported housing, I didn't know what COVID was. Never heard of it at all. I've just spent months on a bender in my room alone. So I haven't been watching the news. And then when I got into the supported housing, I was thinking, right, let's get to meetings, let's meet some people. And they're like, no, you can't, COVID. And I was like, what's COVID? I'd never even heard of the word. I was like, what are you talking about? That was the day Boris gave us lockdown one. That was the 23rd, maybe the 24th. But it was the 23rd or 24th, but it was the day lockdown one happened. So I felt like it was like 28 days later.
About.
It was like I just woke up, come back to the world, and the apocalypse has happened. I didn't have a clue what was going on.
Oh, my God. I mean, Stuart, where to start? I mean, there's so much to talk about and to unpick and to... I don't know. I want to fast forward in many ways because you've talked about sitting on the edge of that bed and staring at that wall, and you reached out for help, basically, which is just incredible, and that is the hardest thing to do. So, you know, every credit. It's just incredible. And now, fast forward to today, you mentioned your nieces there, the nieces that you weren't able to see. Don't mention any names on the podcast, but I've seen on your social media, there's this glorious post of you being able to see your nieces, and it is just full of joy and happiness. And as well, I think it's really important we mention on the pod another fantastic Instagram account that we follow called Sober Circle, who is your beautiful other half, Sammy. So we've talked about you know, where you've came from. And it doesn't really feel that long ago, does it, in the grand scheme of things, to where you are now. It's almost, it's a lifetime apart. So bring us up to present day and tell us where you are now.
Okay, so going into the supported housing, I got some really good therapy. For me, therapy is the thing that's saved my life above all else. It's the thing that really clicked. Once my brain was able to go, oh, that's why I do that. Oh yeah, because that did happen when I was a kid. Maybe that is why my brain does that. It just challenged a lot of my self-beliefs. And now I'm sober for me. And I met Sammy, Sober Circle, I think a week before my 1 year. And I was determined I wasn't going to get into a relationship in my first year. I was just focused on me. I wasn't going to get a job. I wasn't going to get into a relationship. I was just going to focus on therapy and me. That was it. And then coming up to the end of that year, I met Sammy. And this is the weird thing. She runs Sober Circle Southwest. So she runs a group for people who are sober to go and socialise. She lives 20 minutes away from me. We're the exact same age. Mine's a few weeks apart. And we met on Tinder.
No way. No wow. way.
Yeah. And it was just, I was reading her profile, and I was just thinking, that is my profile. And it was the first time I'd ever been like this with a woman. It was just, it didn't start with kind of flirting that I'd normally do. It was just, we were talking about books. We were talking about gender stereotypes. We were talking about racism, because obviously Black Lives Movement was going on and there was big talks on that. Feminism, we're talking big on that. And we just realised we were starting to send these like 5-minute voice notes to each other, and it was going on for about 4 days. We're like, should we just go for a walk in the park? Obviously it was pandemic. And yeah, I knew pretty much instantly. I was like, this is not normal.
Isn't it yeah. lovely? Isn't it? It's the Sorry. Best. Oh. It's so good.
You make a movie out of this.
I was cutting onions earlier. That's what it is.
I felt like the universe had just gone, because I'd stuck to my guns and I'd focused on me and I'd really worked hard in my therapy and stuff. I felt like the universe had just gone, here you go. Well done. Like, you've done what you said you were going to do. Well done. Have some happiness. And yeah, like this is for keeps for me. This is, yeah, number one. But here's the key, and I will say this, and she knows this as well. If her heart or mind ever takes her in a different direction, I'll be absolutely gutted. I'll be heartbroken, but I will be okay. The position I was in when my marriage ended, I was dependent on that. I was dependent on another human being. I'm not that way anymore. So don't get me wrong, I'd be absolutely mortified, I'd be heartbroken, but my bills would get paid, I wouldn't be drinking, I'd be talking in my therapy, I'd be going to support groups, and I would be okay, you know? That was an important thing, and that was the importance of that year, which is just focus on me, like put a foundation there, you know?
I think that's such an amazing story, and I'm a big fan of all the universe delivering stuff to us just when it's right for us, and certainly of, you know, having it, that reward of doing that hard work on ourselves, and then these amazing things do happen. And I think, as you say, it is all down to your hard work and your commitment and your determination. But I'd love to get your views on relationships and sobriety, because you, as you were saying, you had the situation with your ex-wife and her saying you should drink and everything else, and the way that unraveled. And we get a lot of people messaging over the influence, either saying they're drinking because of a bad relationship, or they're trying to stop drinking but their partner won't support them, or they've stop drinking and they've got a new partner and that partner wants them. There's all these sort of different combinations there. And I've always found it fascinating, because I think it is so important in a relationship to have someone that makes you feel like $1 million and makes you feel like you can conquer the world if you want to. But at the same time, you're right, I do believe that our happiness has to come from within, and that self-belief has to come from within. What's your view on the whole, you know, alcohol and relationships and sobriety and everything else?
Obviously, from my own experience, if I had gotten in a relationship somewhere in that first year before Sammy, I don't believe it would have worked out. I don't think it would have been. I don't think I would have been in the position where I could have made that work. Because, and I know this is such a cheesy one-liner, but it's the truth. For me, I genuinely believe if you haven't got self-love, which I didn't, I had self-loathing, I had heaps of it, but I didn't have any self-love. If you don't have that, you just can't have any. You can't love anyone else. You can't have anyone else love you. It's you become dependent on that other person. Like I'm really, really. My therapist has overheard me for saying this, but I'm really lucky to have Sammy. Like she, very similar stories, very similar situations, very similar in terms of we're both very therapized up. So we have our boundaries. We've never once in the time we've been together had an argument. We've had a few disputes, and then we'll go away, talk to the therapists, come back, have a conversation, and it's done. Like it's talked out calmly. We talk about each other's boundaries. Like we know where the other person stands, what to not say again. What, you know, like it's we're really, really good like that. But again, if it was a situation where met someone on Tinder, not necessarily on the same wavelength, just going out on a date, that person was drinking a lot. You find it a bit nervous to explain to them fully why it is you don't drink. I can see that relationship could succeed, but I could also see it going really negatively as well. I needed that time. I needed that time to build that foundation before I had nothing to offer internally, you know?
I see that. And I think what I love about it is that you had that discipline to do that whole year on yourself. Because I know a lot of people, they'll say, yeah, right, that's it. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to work on myself for a year. And then after a couple of weeks or a couple of months, it will just kind of fall by the wayside and a life, you know, through no fault of their own maybe, but life will kind of get in the way. And then it's so easy to slip back into old habits. But the way that you stuck to it and you said to yourself, no, yeah, it's going to be this year, I think is really amazing. And was that difficult to say that you were going to spend this year? Like, did you get distractions? Were you tempted just to slip back?
It wasn't easy. It was easy for the first 2 months, and I was determined I'm not interested in anyone, I'm not interested in getting involved in anything. And then I realised that was actually just because I was just getting sober, and then my libido woke up around about 2 months in, and it was all I could think about for about 2 months. So I had to keep reminding myself, no, no, no. I even came off social media at one point to keep me away from any, because we were locked away because of the pandemic. The furthest away from people you could keep me, that was the way I kept safe, because I knew I'd be in trouble. I knew that if I started to get in relationships and stuff that early on without putting in any work, that would become my primary focus, because it feels good, you know, like that. Not just sex, but the flirty, you know, texting, the flirty conversation, is it, oh, am I getting a message back? And all that stuff, because it makes me feel good and it's a great distraction. It becomes the new alcohol, it becomes the new dopamine hit. But I did say when I came in, there was two things that I was not going to do this time, which is the things that nearly killed me. And one was distract myself with sexual or romantic relationships. Two, I'm not going to just agree with what everyone else says in sobriety and pretend that I think and feel the same just to fit in, because that's what I did the first time. I pretended that I was okay, I pretended I believed certain things, and truth is I didn't. And because I was ignoring what was going on in my head, I had nothing there. It was all fake, it was all false. And that's why I think it crumbled so easily. But those are the two things I said I'm not going to do this time. If it's on my mind, I'm going to say it. If it's what I'm thinking, I'm not going to say it's what I should be thinking, but I'm going to say it's what I'm thinking. Because that's the only way that I could get healthy. And I'm going to stay away from relationships. So it's more, I had to keep reminding myself why I was doing it. But yeah.
How early on did you know that Sammy was sober and vice versa? Like, was it in your profiles or did it come out in those early conversations?
Yeah, so it was both in our profiles, just because, and this is not shade to people that drink. It's not shade to people that drink. But in every profile I seemed to be going through, they were all drinking in every picture. Every single picture, it was drinking. And again, that's fine. I'm not going to throw shade on people for doing that, but it's just like, I didn't want that. I didn't have to have a sober companion, but it would make me flash back to pictures of my relationship with my ex and like how she'd be out, not too much, but out drinking all the time, and I felt left out. And I just thought, I want someone who just gets where I'm at. And then I saw Sammy was sober. And then I read the profile, the things that she was talking about. I was thinking, this is like, I wrote this. This is insane. So I never messaged. I had a little asterisk. I had a little thing about going on Tinder, getting loads of matches, but never actually messaging them. Because I just liked the dopamine hit of getting a match, but I never actually wanted to go and meet anyone. They were just sort of sat there.
So actually, loads of matches, you said. You got loads of
tons. Tons.
I don't even know what he's on about, this bloody Tinder thing. It's all news to me.
Yeah, it's come in since the hit parade left.
Yeah, all right, whatever.
Loads of them. But Sammy was the first one. I just thought, no, I've got to message this person. And yeah, it's like I said, it just went straight. There was obviously a bit of flirting, but it was mainly just deep conversations. And I remember... I'll tell you, this was going to stay between me and my therapist, but I'll tell you. When I was talking to my therapist about her, I went on this massive long rant about this. I was like, this woman's incredible. Like, she runs this sober organization. She's like, she's got her own home. She's got a really high paid job. She's a strong, badass of a woman. I was just really, really bigging her up. And then my therapist, who is a woman, just looked at me and said, do you realize that's the first time that you've ever spoken to me about a woman and I don't know what she looks like? I didn't get what she meant at first. I was like, well, I can tell you if you want. She was like, no, you're not getting it. Like, you've just gone on a 20-minute rant about this woman and you've not mentioned anything about the way she looks. There's something there. And I was thinking, do you know what? You're right, actually. Yeah, and that's what I knew from word go, that it was, yeah, for keeps.
I can't wait for Sammy to hear this episode. Mm. We'll have to get Sammy on as well at some point.
I only started my page because of Sammy.
Get out, really?
Yeah, wow. she had her page, she said, oh, do you want to watch one of my lives? So I was like, okay. I wasn't involved in the online sober community. It was still predominantly in 12-step. And then I watched this live, and I thought, there's quite a lot of people out there that are doing this, that are sober, that are telling stories. And I watched her, and I just sort of, like, in awe of this woman. And I thought, maybe I could do it. That's like a little maybe. I didn't know how to work Instagram. No clue. Or Canva or any of that stuff.
That's me as well, Stuart. You're fine.
I thought I'd make a little profile. I won't add anyone. I'll put some stuff on it, and then no one wants to visit an empty shop. I'll put some stuff on it and see what happens. I picked a logo that was just ready made there and put my letters on it and just made sure that it was in a circle to show that I'm a member of Sober Circle. And then, yeah, 6 months later, it's blown up, to be honest. I'm not expecting that kind of following. It's been a bit mad.
Sound Rebel, and we just wanted to let you know a bit more about us.
Sound Rebel produced this podcast, and we work with all sorts of personalities to help them engage with their current audiences.
We work with actors, football commentators, comedians, personal trainers, radio presenters, hello, influencers, and even world record holders.
So, if you've got an audience but don't have a podcast, get in touch with us.
Oh, and tell us you heard this ad, and we'll produce your first episode for free.
Email hello@soundrebel.co.uk now and take your place in the fastest growing broadcast medium in the world.
Right, back to the episode.
Stuart, when you look back at that photograph, because I can't get it out of my head, of you as that vulnerable young man, you know, that's obviously had a troubled past and really struggled with mental health, and here you are today chatting to us on Over the Influence. How does that make you feel? Have you got any idea of how far you've come?
Depends on the day. Like, sometimes I used to look at that picture with embarrassment and disgust.
No.
Now I look at it with a lot more happiness, joy, empathy, sadness. But I think I was embarrassed of that. And now I'm more in a position where I want to jump in and just hug the kid. Like, I just tell him it's all going to be okay. That was literally about 2 weeks before Christmas, when I was about 18, 19, in a Salvation Army hostel communal room. Because if it was below 0 degrees, you could sleep in the hostels, like reception rooms and stuff. And now I just look back at it, post a lot of therapy, well, yeah, I just want to give the kid a hug, really. But yeah, as for how far I've come, some days I'll be, yes, I've come really far, and then other days I feel like I've not gone far enough, and I'll judge myself. Like I've still got things that I want to accomplish and that I haven't. But yeah, when I look at that picture, it does make me think, well, like from there to here, it's completely different.
I'm not coming on to you, Stuart. You are a thoroughly nice man. Like, we don't know each other very well. You've come on here. We've not met before this, and you're such a nice bloke, and you're so thoughtful in all the answers that you've given to us, and you've been willing to share things that, you know, as you say, I was going to leave this with a therapist, but I think that's such a lovely quality. I'd like to ask you about, because obviously you said you started drinking when you were 12 years old. After your relapse, after 5 years of sobriety, you said you didn't do any work on yourself at that point, and you were kind of trying to bring in the things into your life that you thought would bring you happiness. I think we can all agree that alcohol changes your personality, and it doesn't, not just after a massive, you know, not in terms of 8 pints deep, you're a different person because you're pissed, but in terms of, you know, 3 days later, it's still in your system or whatever. It changes who you are and how you behave. We've talked about this loads of times on the podcast. If you started drinking at 12 and then after you gave up, but you didn't do any work on yourself and just tried to bring in the things that you thought would bring you happiness, when did you really start to discover, like, who you are? Because it's, talking to you now, it's really difficult to imagine that you were a guy that alienated your friends and family, that you were a guy that was getting into trouble with the police. It's so difficult to picture that talking to you now. Like, when would you, like, do you know yourself yet? Are you happy with who you are now? Is it still a journey of discovery?
So I'm happy with who I am now. I don't know myself as well as I want to yet. There's still a lot of self-discovery to do. I'd say the moment it turned around was around about 8 or 9 months into my sobriety, when I got diagnosed with a personality disorder. And I'd always had it, and I didn't know that. Because the more and more I spoke in my therapy, I was talking about this constant inner monologue that I've got that isn't me, but it is me. And I was, lots of other weird things I do, like dissociation, and how I would just, I've walked to a friend's house before and not remembered the walk because I was involved in a bank robbery in my mind. Just random playing out a story. And 50 to 80% of people like me have substance misuse problems. And I didn't know that. I had no idea that all these years I'd had a personality disorder. So once I'd figured that out, I got involved in some chat groups and stuff with people with borderline personality disorder or emotionally unstable personality disorder. And I started learning about different things that I'd always done. I didn't realise they were actually things. I thought I was just not a nice person. I didn't realise there was actual names for stuff, like splitting. When the first time that happened, I was in a chat group with some guy, and I said, oh, I'm such an idiot, I can't believe I did this, blah, blah, blah. And then this lad, who I didn't know, was replied, ha, you idiot. So my brain's immediately gone, who are you calling an idiot? You can't call me an idiot. I don't know you. And I wanted this massive rant. No one saw it. It was internal. And I'm on this massive run. I throw my phone across the room. I've stormed downstairs. I've blocked him on all social media in the space of 5 minutes. Stormed downstairs, had a chat with my housemate. And then it can't stay there with splitting. It can't stay at that point. So it immediately then crashes down to extreme self-loathing, depression. This is why you've got no friends. This is why you end up on your own. This is why you're always going to be alone. This is why you're going to die alone, kill yourself. And it went like that. And then I've spoken to my friend about it. Gone back into the chat. I'd never normally do this either. I'd normally just kind of put the quote over my head. But I've spoken to the guy, I've apologised. I've said, I don't know why I always do this. I always end up overreacting. I'm really, really sorry. And he went, don't worry about it. You just split. I was like, what? And he went, you split. And then he explained to me what it was. It's like a defence mechanism. So it's like, you're going to abandon me, so I'm going to abandon you first. It's a lot. That's a very oversimplified version of it. It's basically, you're going to abandon me, so I'll abandon you all first. I don't need any of you. I don't need anyone. I'm all good on my own. Once I started to realise that stuff, I started to realise there was a lot more to me than I knew was going on internally. once I started to mix with other people like me, I started to realise actually I'm not weird, I'm not abnormal, I'm just different to some people. And now, through learning about myself and things that happen like that, I think the last four splits, that major splits that have come on, I've stopped them. Because I can sit there, through therapy and through work on it, I can sit there and go, am I annoyed at this or am I just splitting? Let's just put the phone down, take 5 minutes and come back to it. And it seems to work, so...
Kind of objectivity, bit of self-awareness on it that you wouldn't have if you didn't understand what it was. Not scientifically, but if you... logically, you know what it is. So you can then apply it to the situation that you feel currently emotional in. But you can almost talk to yourself and say, this is why.
Exactly. Like, I would not know myself to the extent that I know myself now if I didn't share it with someone else. Because that was the only way that I learned who it was. Because I developed a really nice relationship with my therapist to the point where I actually trusted her with anything. And I've got that with her now. I've been seeing her for over a year. But by giving her the stuff that I'd normally be too embarrassed to tell people, like I talk to myself when I'm making a drink, just stuff that I normally wouldn't tell people. Within 90 days, I was on a call with a mental health nurse and it all kicked off and it all went on to this big, long thing of, okay, no, that's not what people normally do. But again, like, you know, I had to give what's inside my head or inside my heart or whatever to other people for them to give me feedback, for me to actually understand who it is I am. Because like you said about drinking from 12, when I first got sober, if I had to say on like a dating profile, hobbies and interests, drinking, like I don't have any. I used to play pool years ago. I played drums when I was in school. But other than that, like, I don't have any. I don't have any hobbies and interests. Now, obviously, it's a lot different because I'm starting to discover what I do like and what I don't. But that's all from talking to other people.
I was going to ask you, Stuart, I think that's so insightful that... And so I'm blown away by the calmness and the way you can just rationalise this in such a brilliant way. And I was going to ask you, or let me backtrack, because someone said to me recently, you know, we sometimes get in a bubble in this sober world where I think we're all quite tuned into things like personal development and self-growth and all these... you know, working on ourselves, basically, and trying to understand our minds and improve ourselves. Someone said to me recently, like, do you guys realise you're in the minority? The vast majority of the population, whether they've got a drinking problem or not, they don't really think about personal growth or self-development or any of these things. Do you think that everyone could benefit from either some therapy or at least some deep introspection and work on yourselves? Or do you think us on the drinking side of the fence are a bit more sort of predisposed to it?
I'm really strong on this, and it might divide opinion, but I don't really care.
That's what we like here, over the influence.
Like I said, I'm not this time around in my sobriety, I'm not around to sort of please other people. It's what I think, But the answer is yes. If they go into it with the correct mindset, not just to shut people up, then everyone could use self-improvement. Everyone could do work on themselves. As long as they're doing it with the right mindset, they're not just going, all right, I'll go just to shut the messes up, whatever. It's good for you. If I could have one mission statement, particularly with men on my page, purely because men's mental health is just something I'm really passionate about, because there's a lot of obstacles in male culture to overcome in order to get men talking. I think, I won't say the women find it easier, I just think they're a step ahead of us when it comes to it. They're sort of leading the charge, and men are just starting to think, oh, maybe there's something in this. But yeah, if I've got one mission statement, it would be people kind of tend to see and get mixed up mental health and mental illness. And when you say mental health, people subconsciously immediately go to mental illness. And I think if you've got the doctor for physical illness, people automatically assume that therapy is for mental illness when it's not. The gym is for physical health and therapy is for mental health. So, you know, I don't plan on leaving therapy for years, even if I'm feeling great. Like, it's not somewhere for me to go and work on my mental illness. It's somewhere for me to work on my mental health. It's somewhere where I can sit down with another trusted human being that I've worked on a relationship with, put all the puzzle pieces on the table with someone I trust and just go, right, okay, let's figure out where this goes. So this happened here, this happened here. That reminds me of when I was in school and then someone would tease me and that's why I'm just trying to, okay, that's why that's happening. Right, brilliant, got you. Like, it's just something to, it's a sounding board. But yeah, it's the gym for the mind. I see it as that. But yes, to answer your question.
No, I'm a big, obviously a big advocate on men's mental health. And I think you're right. It's, we say it so many times, but more does need to be done. And I think there are a lot of people out there that, they do need more help and more support, and just to understand that it's okay not to be okay. And I think that the work that you're doing in particular, Stuart, is so powerful to help people understand that and to help men understand that in particular. Because as you say, as in many things in life, women are one step ahead than us guys. And I think mental health is a key one. Shaz is there nodding her head like, yeah, I know that, I'm a woman.
Obs.
But yeah, I think you're right. What you do is amazing. And anything we can do to spread the word, to get more men talking is absolutely fine by me.
I'll tell you what I believe as well. I believe it doesn't always have to be a big, bold, explosive statement as a man. It happens with lots of micro actions. Like, if my male friend gets a haircut, when he comes out, I'm going to tell him, mate, your hair's looking brilliant. Like, how good's your hair? You're looking great. I wouldn't have done that. I wouldn't have done that because I would have, through fear of teasing and air quote banter.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to go and do anything with my male friends that I would do with some of my female friends. Like, now, let's go get a massage. You know, let's, like, I'd happily sit there with any of my friends and have a face pack or a foot pack and watch a film. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's very
that,
small
Stuart.
Micro actions, you know?
I said
that to a woman in a young person's AA meet a while back. She said, I love it when men embrace their femininity. And I said to her, that's my masculinity. And she kind of looked at me like, that's not what masculinity is. And I was like, here's the thing. Masculinity is what men tell you it is. The same way as femininity, you could have two, and I've met two like this, you can have two feminists that are completely different and have different beliefs in what feminism is. Masculinity is obviously characteristics of a man, of an average man. If we change that culture and we just normalise talking about face moisturiser and, you know, beard oil, whatever it is, like, it will slowly... Do you see what I'm trying to say? We'll slowly sort of change the culture between us.
Oh, I absolutely see it.
You know?
I also love the point that it doesn't need to be this big thing. When speaking about therapy in particular, you know, it doesn't need to be. It's almost, if it's not a big thing, if it's, oh, okay, mate. And do you see Manu got battered by Liverpool last night in the next breath? You know, it needs to be more normalised in that sense, doesn't it? It doesn't need to be this big, Ben's going to see a therapist. Have you heard that? Ben's lost his job and he's going to go and see a therapist. That's not helping anything, is it? It's fine. Like, we're watching, I know I talk about this all the time. Me and Jem love a bit of trash TV. We're watching Married at First Sight Australia at the moment. And we started off as a joke. We were talking about, because Jem was like, how good is it that they've got these experts on hand at every point in their relationship? Like, how many relationships would be better if you could just like, oh, hang on, let's stop this conversation. I'm going to have a chat with the experts and I'll come back and we can readjust. But it's what started off as a joke. We're at the end, we were like, that would actually be really good. Why doesn't everybody have that person? Like, why, exactly what you said, why can't it just, like, surely having somebody who helps you out in times of when you need, it's set a sounding board, right, how can that be this big thing surrounded with stigma?
I was going to say, I'm not going to name him or anything, but I met a man a while ago and he was mid-20s and he was talking about how he'd been getting really frustrated with his girlfriend because cycling was his time. It was his workout time. It's how he got himself in a headspace. It was how he exercised. It's how he kept fit. And his girlfriend kept trying to go on the ride with him. And then he was getting frustrated because she couldn't keep up. And he was getting really, really annoyed with her. And it would always turn into a fight. And then he went to his therapist, discussed it, and suddenly realised that she wasn't trying to exercise with him. She was trying to spend time with him. So then what he did was he just did his exercise on a different day. And then on the day that he went cycling with her, he just didn't see it as exercise. So he slowed down and they just cycled together. They looked at the trees, they had a laugh. But he wouldn't have, in my opinion, noticed that if he hadn't talked it through with the therapist. And it helped the relationship. It helped it be healthier because he was seeing it like he was sitting there getting annoyed and actually realised it was just the way he was seeing it. If he just adjusted his vision, say, actually, your girlfriend just wants to spend a bit of time with you. Like, do your exercise on a different day like you already do. Just see that as not exercise, but social. Sorted. He then told her the conversation that he'd had with the therapist, explained it. And if anything, she was emotional because of he was just honest with her and he was open with her. All that just from talking to someone.
I think it's such a big thing. And as you say, there's connections there with the whole sobriety thing as well. And I think that's what scares a lot of men off, that you don't have to be shouting about it. You don't have to sit everyone down and say, you know, right, guys, I've got a big announcement to make and everything else. And everyone to do the whole like, oh, no, are you OK? And everything else. It is everyone's journey is different. And the main, the most important thing is that people get the help that they need, as you say, the therapy and the insight and the discussion. And I've got to say as well, I'm particularly happy because, yeah, this might be a shock to you, Stuart, but I was never the most traditionally macho bloke. But now to understand that being macho means spa days and massages and face packs and everything else, because I've been doing that for years and I just thought maybe I'm not being macho. But now I am. This is masculinity in 2021, and it's covered in anti-wrinkle lotion and it's feeling pampered.
And you're looking fresh for it, Freddie. You really are.
Oh, Shazza, thank you.
You're welcome. Stuart, I can tell by the look on Freddie's face and Ben's face chatting to you, we've all really, really, really enjoyed it. You said at the start of the pod that you were nervous, never been on a podcast before. Well, I can tell you now, it won't be the last time you're on a podcast, because I think your story is so important. And I just love, I know I keep banging on about it, it's not before and after. It was you as a young man, and it's you today, and the poles apart, and yet it's not that long ago. And chatting to us three on the podcast now, you are intelligent, you are together, you are confident, your story is so important. You are an absolute inspiration to any young man listening that is in an absolute pickle. You've come through the other side, you know, you've dealt with some shocking situations, and it's been a real privilege for us for you to share on the podcast today. So from all of us, thank you. And I think actually, I'm sure Ben and Freddie would agree, we hold our we've got our community, and within that we have these monthly masterclasses. Doesn't matter to us who holds them. What matters is that person has got a story to tell. You can be qualified up to the eyeballs, or you could have just got an amazing story of recovery to share. And I think for men in particular, you'd just be so inspirational. So we want to invite you back into the community, and from the three of us, just say thank you so much. You are sober and fucking enlightened, and I bloody love it.
Thank you very much. Maybe all emotional now.
Oh, Stuart.
I felt like that a few different, especially when you're talking about you and Sammy and the perfect love story that you guys have had. I'd love to invite you in for the masterclass. I think the conversation about, in particular, I feel really interested in this area in terms of what is masculinity in 2021? What is it to be a man? Is it manly to have a fight in a car park outside a pub? Or is it manly to go home and bruised to your family? You know, exactly. Do you know what I mean? Those are the kind of things that I'd love to talk to you about more.
I would 100% be up for it.
Amazing. That is so good. And actually, we've not mentioned this. Can I just say, big up yourself, Stuart, for repping the OTI brand with your T-shirt on there. Absolutely amazing. Let's have a look at that. Get a load. Get a load. Available at overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you. Meet Steve.
It's Steve here, now 619 days sober. I didn't really have access to a sober community in Newcastle. I did attend some little group things, but they weren't really for me. I was too anxious. There was no real structure to it. It was all messy. So being able to just listen into the podcast and feel like you're in a discussion with like-minded people, that really helped me early days when I was struggling with anxiety still. It's also helped, it's given me access to associate with people who I wouldn't come across in my day-to-day life, or I wouldn't think that they would have trouble with alcohol. But yeah, it's been great and it's been amazing, and I hope you keep up the good work. Thank you very much for what you've done for me so far.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk and be part of the Sober Rebellion.